So today is Jack Squire Day at Cornell University. Well, not officially, as I have a message here. Now imagine this thing gets brought out as a scroll, okay? The proclamation of the university, of Cornell University. On the skin of an unborn calf. So says the silvered tongue, fatty. So this message is from an unidentified high-ranking university official explaining why there could not be a declaration of Jack Squire Day at Cornell. President Scorton has shared with me your request for a Jack Squire Day at Cornell on Saturday, June 9th. That's today. Cornell is fortunate to have countless emeritus faculty, countless, who would also be worthy of special recognition, but might not have the occasion to be honored with such fanfare. Perhaps we should continue to look for other meaningful ways of recognizing our illustrious faculty, such as honoring with a luncheon with close friends and classmates, as you are doing, special lectures, and then you merit an et cetera.
Well.
Also, given the fact that Cornell has never bestowed such an honor in the past, more conversations with various entities on and off campus as to whether this was a tradition we wanted to begin. The event you have planned for Jack sounds wonderful, but unfortunately, we will need to proceed without the presidential proclamation. I look forward to seeing you during reunion weekend. Signed, the unidentified high-ranking university official. Well, that to me is a poignant presentation of the perils of pursuing precedent.
This is a proclamation, a real proclamation, from the governor of Florida. Actually, it's from the former governor, I'm sorry, Honorable Jeb Bush. I have a quotation from the current governor, Charles Crist, which goes along with what you just had to say. In response to his being asked for a proclamation for Jack, he said, "If I do a proclamation for Professor Squire, I'll have to issue a proclamation for every goddamn professor retiring to Florida." But fear not, we do have an actual gubernatorial proclamation here from the previous governor. It with seals on it.
Yes. Looks expensive.
But look at this, it's wrapped in a governor's a handkerchief. Oh, with the governor's initials on it, J.B., Jeb Bush. Now, if I can open it, this is on baby lamb skin. Oh. I, John Ellis Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida and current brother and son of two presidents of the same name but with several different middle names, with all the rights and privileges which that position formally afforded, in appreciation of the squires having chosen our state as their place of part-time residence, and with the hope that they will be persuaded to permanently relocate to the Sunshine State, do hereby issue the following proclamation. Whereas, here in Florida, there are no gorges, waterfalls, or hills. Whereas, here there are no kids to call you professor or heads to carve in clay. Whereas here there are no driveways to plow nor air that chills. This governor has a certain poetic.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I hope you're following.
Classy fellow.
Yes. Whereas here there are no seasonal catches of the day nor state taxes to pay. This is because they want you to come down there. Therefore, the state of Florida hereby grants Jack and Jane Squire special privileges and opportunities as follows. I think you can enjoy these, Jack.
I hope so.
You're already doing some of these. Number one, to drive along our intercoastal waterways while seated on white leather upholstery. Number two, to live on a golf course in a gated golfing community and never play golf or cards.
Guilty.
To have shelter in the governor's mansion during hurricanes, wildfires, terrorist attacks, and student demonstrations.
Meaningful.
To own a boat kept in permanent dry dock. To drive our interstate system and never come within 50 miles of Orlando. To a free course in alligator wrestling in the Everglades National Park with the right to eat your opponents. To the sole use of Lake Okeechobee for personal hygiene.
Pretty good, especially since it's our major drinking water supply.
To swim with Florida's endangered manatees and put down those which did not meet your aesthetic standards. To a 2-hour extension and martini exception on all early bird specials. Therefore, with the power formally vested in me as the former governor, failed presidential hopeful, and brother of a failed soon-to-be former president, I hereby proclaim June 9th, 2007, State of Florida, Jack and Jane Squire Appreciation Day.
Because in many respects, institutions have a very short memory, and they're not always very good at recognizing the incredible effort that faculty and other alumni and students make. So I think that the film really is something that that will be very long lasting, and it will be something that we'll be able to celebrate for a long time to come. I thought that both Jack and Jane looked very, very wonderful and sexy really in this film. I mean, seeing them, just the way that they were walking outside of their house, on the boat, driving the Jags, I mean, one would think that the life of this academic life was full of sort of glory and a sort of life of fashion, Paris, cafes, all this kind of stuff. What was very interesting in the film, and I noticed in the very short time that I had the incredible opportunity to work with Jack, is that, the work, the way that Jack works, is really collaborative, and I think that came across in the film. But really, the kind of work that Alan and others did, architecture students taking his class, I've heard this from others, from Bob. I think it's really incredible how he managed to instill in people who weren't really artists this incredible sense of welcome and this sense of creativity and participation in the art department and in the field of sculpture, to do things that were extremely tectonic in their character, but also very collaborative. We've certainly been incredibly fortunate to have had Jack involved for the period that he has been a professor in the department, and I know that he continues to be a mentor for both the faculty and the students. And I very much hope that he will continue in that role for years to come. And I'm really glad that you're all here to honor Jack and to celebrate his incredible achievements and contribution to the field of art and to Cornell.
I think we all know how terrific Jack is as a teacher and how he just nurtured us along and got absolutely the most out of all of us, and I think we all know how sometimes he indirectly taught us. We were led to figure it out for ourselves, and that was probably even better. I was working on a sculpture in the foundry, and Jack had a habit of sort of coming around and looking over your shoulder and seeing what you were doing, and all of a sudden, this long Brooks Brothers clad hand sort of reached over me and pointed, and he said, "This weld offends me." And I thought, whoa, excuse me. And I was totally taken back. However, I never, ever made a bad weld again. So I think that, you know, craft was very important to Jack. He taught us that don't let your craft get in the way of your art. Don't distract from your art. And I still, whenever I do a weld, I think, is that hand going to come down and point at it again? So I graduated, and somehow my diploma never arrived. And I waited and waited, no diploma. Finally, one day, I called Jack. I said, Jack, could you snoop around and see what the problem is? I never got my diploma. About a week later, I got a FedEx with my diploma from Day Hall, and it said, please acknowledge receipt of your diploma. So I called, and there was a nice young woman there, and I said, thank you, I received my diploma, but I'm a little bit curious. Could you tell me what happened here? I mean, she said, oh yes, Mr. Perlman, you had several speeding tickets that were unpaid, and we don't issue diplomas until they're paid. And I said, but I mean, what happened? I didn't pay them. And they said a gentleman came in, and I said, what did he look like? And they said, oh, he was driving a white Jaguar. And I said, are you sure? What did he look like? And she said, Bond, James Bond. The next speaker is Bob Blakely, who has been my friend for 45 years. This is incredulous to lots of people because we look and act so differently. Some people have even said, are you sure you two are from the same species? But in fact, we absolutely are.
And I'd actually like to start on a little more formal note. And there's the annual financial plan of the university, which is presented to the trustees. And this year, there's 32 pages devoted to the faculty. And you might ask, why are there 32 pages devoted to the faculty? Because much as Jack, there are actually 600 members of the faculty, which is approximately one-third, who will be retiring in the next few years. So we have a tremendous amount of renewal going on. And I'd like to quote from this. I think it really exemplifies what many have said in a personal way here, but I think put it in the context of what's said in this report also is special. What makes great faculty? Students and colleagues often comment that great faculty are known to be passionate about their academic interest and to share their enthusiasm widely. A little later on in this section, it goes on to quote Morris Bishop, whose book Jack just got. And he's talking first about the 19th century, and he says, they had the proud conviction that they were shaping great things to come. In this, of course, they were quite right. Cornell's current faculty faced obstacles as daunting as their forebears, although some challenges are different and many are drastically more complex. Yet the fundamental interaction between teacher and student remains unchanged. Faculty are drawn to this profession for love and desire. Because in general, it is exactly what they want to do in life. That euphoria combined with no small talent and a lifetime of training helps to create a great faculty. And I think Jack is very exemplary of that. But I was also fortunate enough to be very much influenced by Jack's work. And what was mentioned earlier was the work at the Johnson Museum reflecting Jack's work from 53 to 93. And there was one particular sculpture which had a great influence on me, and I'm sure all of you have seen it. It's right here, called Double Creature. Great piece of work. It was done in 1963. It was the first year I took a sculpture course here. But when I looked on page 2, I thought there was also something that was very, very important, which has been reflected here, and it's the dedication. This exhibition is dedicated to my wife, Jane, without whom I would not have become a sculptor nor remained one for these 40 years. Let me say in conclusion, You will not really be leaving your Cornell friends and former students. We'll all be very much with you in the future as we have in the past. Jack, thank you for all you have done for each of us and Cornell University.
It's called Blame the Computer. Jack was, in Jack's beat, brought to the computer in very recent times, and even then with reluctance. So in July 2002, the start of the six-month-long campaign to take apart AANP, he was in need of some assistance when it came to using cyberspace. He had the idea that the best way to stem the tide of this dismantling was to reach out immediately to inform all 64 trustees of the news and how he felt about the plan. And he was savvy enough to know that the quickest way to share was through email. However, the problem became how to unearth all the electronic addresses of the board and how to send out 64 identical individual messages that appeared to come from his computer. By some good fortune, our mutual friend, Joel Perlman, had just hooked up Jack with my wife, Maddie, regarding this crisis. And luckily for Jack, she knew how to search and how to send and was eventually made willing by his persuasive tactics to be the conduit of Jack's delivery. And so it went, that in the very early days of August 2002, Jack wrote and Maddie emailed and emailed and emailed 64 individual times that Professor Squire letter to trustees. But Jack did not stop there. He enlisted her help to track down the email addresses and send the Squire letter to his numerous former students. So that's how their friendship grew full speed ahead, from that time until now, resulting in the Simply Squire video premiered today. In gratitude, Jack gifted Maddie with a catalog from his 93 Johnson retrospective inscribed, "Maddie, win or lose, we know we," underlined, "tried." Well, they certainly did try, and they absolutely did win. So again, in Jack speak, we're still pleased with ourselves about that little project. Jack and Jane, for there is no Jack without Jane at his side, were my role models of elegance, worldliness, and of the joys of being a successful and productive artist couple. Mr. and Mrs. Squire, as I always have respectfully addressed them, were and still are the epitomizers of what we all strove to achieve. He, recognized for his sculptural work, forever elegantly and impeccably attired, they, hosts to the local intelligentsia and to visiting artistic and academic dons. Their modernistic house was infamous for the missing central column and its spare interiors, the backdrop for glittering reunions of the glitterati to which we aspired to be invited.
The sciences may make life possible, the arts make it worthwhile. Of all the evenings and all the conversations that passed between us, this is the one outstanding line that I have always associated with Jack Squire, and I remain convinced that it is one belief that underlies so much of his work and his life. To stand among his work, both in the realistic representations or the abstract related shapes and forms, is to remind us the power and depth that can give our lives meaning and delight. From Victor Colby, Jack's colleague for so many years, 25 years ago when I retired, I wondered how Cornell would get along without me. But then I realized Jack would still be here, and to my considerable satisfaction, Cornell has done very well indeed since then. Jack, with the help of three new presidents, has kept the university on an even keel. Our college has managed to avoid being dissolved and its work diluted by being parceled out to other parts of the university. Things are being revamped, reconsidered, reorganized, and expanded, and the future looks more and more manageable. So I think, Jack, that it is pretty safe now for you to step down. From Earl and Polly Flansburgh, who have penned a poem, or maybe they have pixeled a poem. Ode to Jack Squire, simply the best. We are with you in spirit at this grand event and pen these lines with loving intent. Our hearts are riveted to Simply Squire. Is he really planning to retire? It was Jane and Jack who first gave to Cornell an endowed chair that fits so well, designed for the College of AA and P. All hail such generosity. Adored by his students, Professor Jack looked ahead and never back. He worked with rolled up sleeves and verve his beloved foundry to preserve. His fame as a sculptor is known far and wide. We've just a few samples to name with great pride. In our woods, column and capital, with ivy entwined, reminds us of ancient, more peaceable times. In the living room, Margaret Elizabeth models her hat. It covers her head, and that's about that. For when it comes to haute couture, she knows full well that less is more. On the coffee table, we must mention a classical figure of unique dimension. Is Caryatid a he or a she? There's magic in the mystery. Above our heads, just over the bed, hangs a stunning paint print in black and red, recalling the Johnson Museum showing with 40 years of sculpture glowing. We raise a glass, it's champagne we're sipping to Professor Jack Squire, our Mr. Chips of Chipping. From Roberto Einaudi, this is coming internationally from far away. Jack has always had the unusual ability to stimulate the interests and talents of his students. He succeeded in getting the best out of his pupils by making them focus on specific issues within a finite framework. This happened to me as his student at Cornell, 1960-61, and then again to his pupils in the Cornell in Rome program, when I saw the same methodology at work with equally strong results. In the mid-80s, I was interviewed regarding an exhibit held at the Colosseum in Rome. I remember the interview well, but never saw the film on television. Jack did, and because at that time he had been discussing with Dean Bill McMinn about the possibility of opening a program of the college in Rome, Jack convinced Bill, whom I did not know, to come and see me to discuss setting up a program in Rome. From that initial contact was born the Rome program. I became its first director, and of course, who was the first professor of art from Cornell? Jack, of course. That first semester came off beautifully, and Jack and Jane were essential to its success.
I was honored to be asked by both Maddie and Alan to say a few words, and it's really just a pleasure to be here, really. Congratulations. So when I came to Cornell in 1971, Jack was already just a legend, you know, one of a professor who has, you know, reputation preceded him. And I really didn't know him while I was here, and I really got to know him a bit through the potential disbanding of the college. And I was chair of the advisory council at that time, the advisory council of the College of Architecture, Art, and Planning. And so there was a huge, as you all know, alumni outcry that this was not the right thing for the university to be doing, both for the university as well as for our own disciplines. So I remember advisory council meetings where there would be some faculty who would be there sort of in the wings. And I remember seeing Jack and thinking, I can't believe the Jack Squire is here, you know, sort of here to kind of battle our cause with us. And some of the faculty were actually for disbanding, and others were not. There was a range of views. So his participation was huge, just huge and incredibly valuable. Some other things that come to mind are this past spring, there was the 20th anniversary of the Rome program. And I'm sure you all read about it in the Chronicle and in the Sun, but Moissan organized a 20th anniversary celebration that was unbelievable. It was unsurpassed in Cornell events, I think. And there was a tremendous tribute to Jack. He was spoken of from the beginning to the end of it. It was 4 days long. And Roberto Einaudi talked about the founding of the Rome program, and Bill McMinn was there and talked about it, and talked about how it was really the three of you who really formed that program. So I think you've left just a tremendous legacy.
Here's one from Tony Caro. I remember clearly the first time I saw Jack Squire. I was walking down a corridor. Tony Caro is Hispanic. I could do this and imitate him, but I think that... I remember clearly the first time I saw Jack Squire. I was walking down a corridor when I saw this good-looking guy. I said to myself, who is this guy? I think he is a movie star. I think I have seen him in the movies. Then one day, I saw him with a lady on campus, and I was convinced that he was a movie star and the lady also. I'm reading this verbatim. It was a few months later that I found out that they were Jack and Jane Squire, and that he was a sculptor and a teacher. As most of you know, I come from the Dominican Republic. And Jack, I'm gonna read this regular, because this is the important part. I come from the Dominican Republic, and Jack was the only professor I had who was interested where I came from and came to visit me in my country. My classmate, Michael Rosen, Alan and Chimikoff and I like to impersonate you. I had an advantage over him since, like you, I was from Illinois, as you like to call it. One day, I told you I was from Chicago. You acted surprised. Where did you think I was from? Oh, I don't know, you said, someplace like Buffalo. In the spring semester, 1963, you agreed to let me try realism. I spent the entire semester copying in clay an 18-inch high plaster cast of a seated Roman pharaoh. With calipers and rulers, I was getting the basic form okay. Not so the face, especially the mouth. You asked, is this the pharaoh after the first shipment of lemons arrived in Egypt? I wanted to make a plaster cast, but blew the whole operation and wrecked the clay model. You were sympathetic. Well, you said, sometimes it happens to the best of us. You chuckled and then said, it happens to the worst of us too. We kept signing up for your classes even into our fourth and fifth years. There was a constant kibitzing and carrying on. Generally, you seemed to like it, but one day you threw up your arms and said, you guys are just too old to be going to school. Cornell Winter Night, a haiku for Jack and Jane. Water rushes over rocks. Clay, metal, wood speak quietly. Foundry and snow sleep. Jack. This is me speaking, finally. Jack, you have truly been a great teacher and mentor to us all, and a shrewdly optimistic participating citizen in the university community, speaking the truth when it was unpopular, and with a rare personal and intellectual courage and integrity that frankly is extraordinarily difficult to maintain. You are an irreplaceable force and persona. And as it must be, the institutional will move on and in a sense not care, because institutions can't care, only the people can. The gifts that people give to others as teachers and as parents, the gifts that you gave to all of us, are really the birthrights of those who receive those gifts. And we, excuse me, we have no need to say thank you unless we choose to. I think that I can say with some confidence that all of us here, and including those who couldn't make it today, choose to, and most emphatically, for playing to our strengths, for dispelling our fears, for enabling us by your example to understand that wit is wisdom, for giving us an endless supply of throwaway lines to thrive on. And if you think about it, we all thrive on our mentors' throwaway lines, because there is wisdom in that wit. For your unrestricted gifts, Jack and Jane, thank you for helping to build the foundations of our lives.
And I want to say a few things I want to get right, so I'm going to read them. I hope you'll understand. Of course, first I'll say today I had some inkling of what was going to be said by my
trustworthy friends, such as Alan, and on and on and on. And it's with some relief I've discovered that after all, you came to praise me, not to bury me.
I almost said the same thing.
Oh, yeah, somebody else did, I think. You know. No originality. But I do detect, I think, a certain amount of affection here, and it both embarrasses me and touches me very, very deeply. Now I'm getting to the part I want to read, because I want to get it right, and if you're right and I speak as I should on important occasions or important events, this must be said, in my opinion. All of us here remember on July 19th, 2002, when for the second time in 25 years, Day Hall's forces rumbled onto the north end of the campus with the specific intent of dismantling A.D. White's favorite college. We suspected that war had been declared. Our suspicions were confirmed when, in short order and with no notice, and at a time when most of our faculty were not in Ithaca and all of our regular students were away, we were delivered an ultimatum by the administration to either completely perfect ourselves as a college by January at the latest, or be strewn to the four winds. No yardstick was provided by which we could measure our perfectibility, and our questions to members of the administration were deflected handily. In effect, we were told that just how we were to achieve a state of grace was our problem. Just do it. Fortunately, owing to the efforts of a group of loyal alumni of this college, many of whom are in this room, we managed to change the minds of our good administrators and receive an 11th hour reprieve, or we wouldn't be here today. All this was achieved by a nearly explosive letter writing campaign, which placed over 200 individual letters, all in support of the college, on the desks of the members and the chairman of the board. We had, it seems, some friends. Many friends, in fact, some inside the board itself. Bob Blakely gave us his unwavering and invaluable support, while Jill Lerner, who became a trustee even as bombs were falling, was then, and remains today, our very able representative to the board. These letters sent to the trustees proved to be very persuasive. Alan Chimbakoff's letter ran to 10 pages. Neil Weinfield even offered to fly from Chicago to personally speak to the board. And although I will admit to writing the first letter, Joel Perlman steered me to Maddie and Phil Handler, who saw to its wide circulation via email and spent endless hours trafficking all the correspondence which followed. It was Joel's friendship with Bob Blakely and the Handlers that was the core of the successful campaign to save the college. Well, one thing led to another, and as a direct result of the resolution of the so-called college crisis, we find ourselves here today with a new dean, a newly revived college, and with a promise of a new building to house it. To those of you who joined the battle, may I say, you have not been fair weather friends, and the college owes you all a sincere vote of thanks for your loyalty. But most of all, you should congratulate yourselves for saving the old school. To conclude, I'm particularly grateful to Maddie and Phil Handler for producing their very impressive video. Jane and I didn't think they had much to work with, but they made it seem as if we actually knew what we were doing for the last 50 years.
So today is Jack Squire Day at Cornell, simply because we say and have the guts to say that it is.